Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, August the 23rd. Bum, 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 bum. You know what that means, don't you, Fred Jackson? It's Ted Koppel's Nightline. Remember that? He would always tell you what date it was. That's from yesteryear. Walker Wildman co-hosting with Fred Jackson and me today. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here.
We are all together here in studio in the media capital of the world, Tupelo, Mississippi. And we go to our correspondent in Kansas City, Kansas. You doing? Our outpost in Kansas.
That's right, our outpost in Kansas. Yeah, that music you just did. I thought it was going to be like football music from like you were trying to do the ESPN thing or something like that.
I'll be coming up with that here shortly. Because
we're almost there, Tim. We're almost there.
Exactly. But you remember Ted Koppel's Nightline for the Iranians?
Oh yeah. You know, back in the 70s and the 80s. That was like all you could watch late at night because that was before CNN and way before Fox News. His program was huge back in the day.
Oh, Ted Koppel, yep. Bum, 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 bum. I think that's how it went. But anyway, he started with the Iranian hostage crisis. And that show, went on for many, many years as a top news show at night. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues. That's Ray Pritchard. Ray's joining us today. We got a lot to talk about. Jan Markell will be our guest in a little while, as will Brigitte Gabriel. You don't want to miss Brigitte Gabriel. She's the founder and chairman of Act for America. You've heard her before here on AFR, I'm sure. Now, Brigitte talks real fast, okay? So you just be prepared. Just tune your ears for fast-talking Brigitte. But she is a wealth of good information, and she is she's a stalwart for our country in terms of national security. And you don't want to miss this interview with Brigitte Gabriel, which I met her personally a few months back in Washington, D.C., and just got to take a picture with her because I said, you know, Brigitte, to my wife, you're a rock star. So if I get a picture with you, that's going to be good for me. So my wife will be impressed. So anyway, don't want to miss that interview coming up in just a few minutes. So no more traveling for you for a while, Ray?
For about another 10 days. And then we start again heading down to Florida for a week. But the longest part, you know, the 4 weeks in a row, that's done for the year now. So it's a few days here and a few days there.
You're going to come see us, or are you flying down there? Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah, let's see. I'll be, but not until December. I'm coming through. I'll be in Tupelo in December.
Okay. I thought maybe you said you're going to Florida from Kansas City. You'd come right through here and see us. But
listen.
You're going to fly over us.
Yes, I'll wave. I'll wave from the plane as we're going over.
Yeah. I've told you all this before, but I've traveled quite a bit, and sometimes I have to fly out of Memphis. Either fly out of Memphis or fly out of Birmingham, usually. Sometimes Tupelo, but anyway, what pains me is when I have to get on a plane in Memphis, and fly to Atlanta, so I can go to Texas.
Yeah, that's right.
And I fly exactly over my house,
right?
Change planes in Atlanta. And then I fly back over my house.
Look over your house twice, right?
Mm-hmm. Look down, see my house, flying to Dallas. And then to go home, I got to go from Dallas to Atlanta to fly over my house.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then Atlanta to Memphis, I got to fly over my house. And I don't know. It's demoralizing.
When you wish you knew how to parachute.
Yeah.
Pop that door open.
That's
jump
right,
out.
And just float on down.
Yeah. Flying over your house twice, though, that's you should, a man shouldn't have to do that, Fred.
Yes, that's for sure.
All right, Fred, by the way, you're going to be going home to Canada here before
that's
long,
right. Next week, heading north to visit my mom and sister up in Nova Scotia.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I know you're looking forward to that.
I do. Get to see them for about a week every
year.
Hey,
if I go to Nova Scotia, what should I expect? What's the terrain? What's the
Well, the word Nova Scotia is a Latin term for New Scotland.
Okay, is that where it comes from? Okay.
That's where it comes from. And so, especially on the east end where I'm from, Cape Breton Island, it is relatively mountainous, 800,000-foot mountains there. Very pretty, especially in the fall when the leaves are changing, a lot of hardwood there. But it's a beautiful place right along the Atlantic coastline there. Halifax is the capital, about 300,000 people now. And then I'm about 240 miles beyond that east of there in Cape Breton. That's where.
So
I'm
is right. Everybody, is 90% of the are 90% of the people there of Scottish descent?
There are a lot of Macs, Mackenzie and McKinley and McKelly, right. And you name it.
Is that Irish or Scottish?
That is Scottish.
Or both.
In fact, in Cape Breton, in St. Anne's, Cape Breton, there is a Gaelic college.
A what?
A Gaelic college. Gaelic is the language.
Oh, okay.
My grandfather on the Mackenzie side, my mom was a Mackenzie, he spoke Gaelic. But there is still a Gaelic college there, and people come from all over North America. They learn Gaelic, but also Scottish dancing. And one of the dances is they put two swords on the floor and they dance around those swords. So that's still in operation. Some people may say, why in the world?
So, Fred, are you going to show us some Scottish dancing someday?
That will not happen.
Okay. Yeah, I would like you to take some video of that.
Will not be doing, nor will I wear a kilt. I've never had a kilt on, but that's a big deal.
Had to draw your line at your family heritage somewhere, right?
That's right. That's right.
All right, Fred, what's in the news?
Molly Tibbetts, this tragic story of this University of Iowa student, 20 years old, was missing for a month. The search went on, caught the attention of the nation. As we learned earlier this week, her body was found. The man charged as a 24-year-old illegal alien, Christian Bahina Rivera. He appeared in court yesterday, being held on a $5 million bond. Now, we were told earlier the farm on which he has worked for a number of years there in Iowa went through the E-Verify system, which is the federal system supposedly that employers can check to make sure these individuals are in the country legally. We have now learned that that employer did not do that. We're not sure why, but he did not do that. Also, we have also learned that when he arrived in Iowa in 2014, he presented an out-of-state government-issued photo identification. Now, sadly, in this country, one of the problems with regards to illegal immigrants, that some states, like California, basically you can show up, and I think the Mexican consulate in Los Angeles, back a few years ago, we were doing stories on this, just offered these IDs, government-issued IDs. So you get your job there. And he also had a matching Social Security card in all of this. So this is happening. We were talking about this at our story meeting this morning. There are millions of illegal immigrants in this country. This is how easy it is. Just get government ID. Just steal a Social Security number and you're in. This guy worked here for years, worked on this farm. Nobody questioned it. So here's what we're learning, though. I think with the Molly Tibbetts case, there's almost a tipping point here. People are just fed up with this stuff. And so Elizabeth Warren was interviewed the other day and asked about the murder of Molly Tibbetts, the fact that an illegal immigrant. She was asked about this, and this is what Elizabeth Warren had to say. She's a Democrat from Massachusetts.
I'm so sorry for the family here, and I know this is hard, not only for the family, but for the people in her community, the people throughout Iowa. But one of the things we have to remember is we need an immigration system that is effective, that focuses on where real problems are. Last month, I went down to the border, and I saw where children had been taken away from their mothers. I met with those mothers who had been lied to, who didn't know where their children were, who hadn't had a chance to talk to their children.
And all right, I think we all heard enough of Elizabeth Warren. She's asked about Molly Tibbetts,
right,
who has been murdered,
right,
because the suspect took the cops to the site of the body of Molly Tibbetts. So, I mean, he's a suspect formally, but all right. She switches immediately to, but the big problem is, and I went down to the border, is the separation of these kids from their parents, which has been going on for years when families come across the border illegally. she switches the total focus away from the murder of Americans by illegal immigrants to this. She says, here's the big problem in all of this. There is outrage. These angel moms, these are the parents of Americans who have been killed by illegals. She was being interviewed, one of these angel moms last night. It's just outraged about this. We've had other who's the national Dana Loesch was interviewed on Fox this morning. She went down a list of Americans who have been killed by illegals. How come Elizabeth Warren didn't want to deal with this? Mm-hmm. Now, just a few minutes ago, the Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick, was interviewed about this. You listen to what he had to say about the nonsense that was going on in Washington about not dealing with this problem of illegal immigration.
We're going to have to get close to 60 Republicans in the Senate so that Chuck Schumer can't block these bills. This is pure politics. And it's not just about the American lives. It's about the people who do want to come here, not the criminals, but the people who want to be proud Americans, who want to come to this country like people came through Ellis Island, legally, proud to be Americans. Most of the people that cross the border who come here for a better life, they don't want to have to swim across the river. They don't have to be raped by their handlers as a bounty to cross. They don't want to be stuffed in an 18-wheeler. They want to come here legally. They want to live out of the shadows. They want to be part of this country. But until Congress fixes this, it's not going to happen, and we're going to see more Americans die. Just in Texas in the last 7 years, we've had hundreds killed by illegal immigrants. We've had over 150 kidnappings. We've had nearly 6,000 people sexually assaulted by criminals, and we're spending billions of dollars of our taxpayer money to do what the federal government was not doing under Obama, and this president is doing everything he can.
All right, there you have it. And that's Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick. He even said, and I'm quoting here, that Chuck Schumer, Minority Senate Leader Chuck Schumer, has the blood of Molly Tibbetts on his hands. Mm. Pretty passionate.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's exactly right. I mean, when you're in charge of laws, of passing laws that protect our country, when you're in charge, Democrat or Republican, I think Republicans are equally as responsible. But when you're in charge of setting laws and standards that are intended to protect American citizens, and you refuse to pass the laws necessary to protect American citizens, like Molly Tibbetts, then yeah, you're wholly responsible, because that's what you're there for. And so the Democrats, I don't know how long they can go continually being elected by the American people when they're so blatantly for lawlessness. Mm.
You know, we discussed this whole thing the other day. Here you have a young woman who represents a lot that is right about America, who's out jogging, right? She's in a small town in Iowa. And this man, this illegal alien who knows, Fred, how he got, you know, the Social Security and all the rest, but he got it illegally, and he's there in Iowa for years. Nothing is done about it. And I am outraged as much as anything else by what Elizabeth Warren's callous unconcern for an American citizen murdered by an illegal alien. Molly Tibbetts did not have to die. And if the law had been enforced, she would still be alive today. And to me, that's just the bottom line of it.
Yeah, boy, within 1 minute, she's switching to, I went to the border, and mothers are being separated from their children by President Trump. President Trump's ICE agents or whoever. That's what she goes. She goes immediately to the political. For those who accuse the conservatives or President Trump of making this a political issue, talking about what happened in Iowa with this young lady, It has to be political to an extent, because you can't talk about the issue is here. The crimes that are being committed in this country by people who should never be here in the first place. And if we had strong border security, a lot of them would not be here. Thus, a lot of these crimes would not have been being committed. Mm. And this murder, for example, this is just Kate Steinle. You talked about her, but. When they talk about President Trump talked about this yesterday or 2 days ago, the laws, the immigration laws that need to be fixed. I remember reading about the contradictory, almost contradictory laws that that our ICE agents and so forth have to abide by as these folks come across the border illegally, make it so it's almost impossible to not separate the children from the adults who bring the children. And and the adults know this, and they exploit this.
Yes.
And some of them even say, you know, they leave their children there because they don't, they'd rather be free in America than be responsible for the minors that they brought along with them. But that's somehow President Trump's fault, you know.
Yeah.
If you come here illegally, if you try to enter the U.S. illegally, and then you're somehow separated from your family, that's on you.
Right.
Whoever you are, because you chose to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing about remember the gentleman down in Mexico or somewhere in Central America, and he told his wife, or I think it was his wife, maybe his girlfriend with her children, she said, I'm going to the U.S. with the kids. He said, well, you know you're going to go up there. You're probably going to get separated.
Right.
Well, I'm going anyway, you know.
From Honduras.
You remember that story?
Yeah.
Was it Honduras?
Yeah, the mom was from Honduras.
Yeah, and so if you, you know, that's...
Well, not to mention, we have hundreds of thousands of families separated in the U.S. because their parents have broken laws.
Right.
And they're in the judicial system, and the kids are in the foster system. And so if you want to start putting families together on the border, well, let's start letting everybody out of jail in the U.S.
Well, the fact is it's a political war that we're having in our own country about this, because I don't know what percentage, but I'm telling you, 40% of Americans, of our fellow Americans, don't want borders. They want open borders. And a lot of Christians, even liberal evangelicals, that's what you want to call them, they advocate for open borders because they believe that, you know, the Christian thing to do is take care of the world, you know, basically. And you got an immigrant, doesn't matter whether they're getting here, how they get here, we need to take care of them. And I think that's an abuse of the scriptures.
Yes, it is.
And a misinterpretation of the scriptures, the idea that we can't have border security, or can't have laws that protect our country, border laws. You know, and Ray, we talked about this yesterday. A lot of folks on the left or in the center who, you know, talk about these illegal immigrants, they don't have an answer for you. You will say to them, well, you're for open borders, and they'll say, absolutely not. I'm for border, you know, having borders.
Right.
But they're for having borders, but for all practical purposes, they're not, because what they're saying is, if the people can make it here illegally and beat our system, then they should be allowed to stay. Well, that's for all practical purposes. I use that expression, open borders.
Well, really, we've got two different problems here, don't we? And you've pointed out, really, both sides of it. On the one hand, we've got contradictory laws,
right,
which have created the chaos on the border. And until Congress has the courage to, cut the knot, right, and fix the legal mess, we're going to have these bad scenes down on the border. Second, the question of what to do about the people who are already here is, that's one question,
right?
Okay? I don't even see how that impinges on the question of what do we do going forward. We need better security, better laws. We need a better system on the border, or this is going to get much worse. And what happened in Iowa is going to be repeated over and over and over again.
But I think, I'm sad to say, I don't know what percentage, but I'm thinking 40% of Americans agree with Elizabeth Warren. They don't want borders. They don't want.
It might be higher than that.
It may be closer to 50. I don't know. I would guess 40% of Americans don't want border security. They want open borders, and they think anything less than that is inhumane. We need to basically open our borders to the world.
Mm.
That's what they believe. So we have to contend with that. You know?
What is a nation that doesn't have secure borders? It's not really a nation at all, right? If anybody anywhere can come in at any time, then that's the end of national sovereignty.
Right. Yeah.
Borders define a nation.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, but the left doesn't believe that. Now, I agree with you, but the left doesn't believe that, and the left is a substantial part of our American voting population. So,
I think the president should run hard on this over the next 8 weeks leading up to the election in November. I think he should run hard on this. I think he should point out the Democrats and the sanctuary cities and what's going on there. You have people on the left who want to abolish ICE.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. It's called progressivism, and it's popular with a lot of Americans. I'm sad to say. I will say this though. A lot of these laws that should be changed relative to immigration cannot be changed in the Congress for this reason. Because the Republicans take a lot of blame, and they do deserve blame to this extent. I don't think the blame rests in the House of Representatives among the Republicans. I think that the blame needs to go to the Senate, Republican leaders like Mitch McConnell and others, for this reason. And the Republicans in the Senate, most of them want to maintain the filibuster. Okay, the filibuster requires 60 votes to bypass or to overcome. So that the Republicans only have 51 or whatever. So you can never pass any legislation of consequence, really, if you have to have 60 votes instead of just 51, since a simple majority. Well, the Republicans in the Senate, this is not often talked about, most of them, they want to maintain the 60-vote threshold. Mm-hmm. So here's what I'm saying, and many of them would reject how I'm going to frame it. The Republicans in the Senate don't want anything to get done because they handcuff themselves in the name of, well, one day the Democrats will control the presidency and we'll be glad we're able to handcuff them. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Right. I'm telling you, I don't agree with that philosophy, but for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But the Republicans in the Senate have tied their own hands from doing anything of consequence in this legislative, in Congress, in Washington. And so if you're going to do that, then you have to be willing to accept the blame when nothing gets done. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I view it, it's honestly like a big game, and it's a never-ending game.
It's called the swamp.
Yeah, it's what they do. When the Democrats are in power, they blame the Republicans for blocking everything. And then they say, we need more Democrats, we need more Democrats. They have all kind of hearings on stuff. Republicans get in charge, they blame the Democrats for blocking everything, and they have hearing after hearing of all this criminal activity, and nobody ever's held responsible. And they pass these horrible budget deals, and they blame the other party. So it's this big game, and it's got to change, and the only way it's going to change is if we change who goes to Washington.
You know, I think that we just see more and more. President Trump said he was going to try to clean the swamp.
Yeah.
It's going to take a whole lot more than 2 years to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, the swamp is the swamp for a reason.
It's deep and wide.
Oh, yeah.
Right, right. And anyway, we are going to talk to Jan Markell in just a few minutes. Also, Brigitte Gabriel will be with us at 9:45. A lot of other issues to discuss, but Fred, I think you're right. I think the president and the Republicans will probably make a big campaign issue of, you know, the consequences of not doing anything about illegal immigration into this country. But again, we have to realize that close to half of our fellow Americans don't want anything done about illegal immigration. We have to contend with that. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
You can use this information right here.
Tim Wildman discusses life's most important issues.
So you could have a sea turtle alive out there right now that was here during the Civil War.
It's like getting a university degree.
Kind of.
Tell the world.
Here's What's the question, Ed? How wide is the wingspan of the world's largest roach species?
Listen to the Trivia Friday edition of Today's Issues, Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Trivia Friday. Woo. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, the very first day in Israel, when we're staying in Jerusalem, we go to the Mount of Olives. And it's there at the Mount of Olives we look out over the old city of Jerusalem. It's a spectacular sight. You've seen it in pictures before, but it's another thing to actually be there as we walk down from the Mount of Olives to the Garden of Gethsemane and we pray there. It's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country visiting the Holy Land, the land of Jesus. If you want information on this March 14th through the 22nd tour, just call us and we'll send you a brochure. Call 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5, and leave us your name and your address and we'll mail you a brochure. Or if you want to simply go online at twholyland.com, everything's there. twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Since 1971, Liberty University's values have been defined by a commitment to excellence and a biblical worldview. Their mission of training champions for Christ has remained the foundation of everything they do. It's that mission that propels Liberty students to excellence in the classroom and beyond. More than 550 programs of study from undergrad to doctoral degrees, effectively preparing students to enter a competitive job market. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. That's liberty.edu. Lawmakers in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts are embroiled in a debate about gender. A proposed bill would have placed a third gender option on Massachusetts driver's licenses, but the legislation was derailed thanks in part to the efforts of Republican Representative Jim Lyons. Mr. Lyons, who is a conservative, forced a vote on the 73 gender options available on Facebook. His point being, if you add a transgender option to the driver's license, well, you also have to add the 73 genders recognized by Facebook, all things being equal, of course. Under the rules of the State House, lawmakers would have been forced to allow for 10 minutes of debate on each of the 73 amendments, basically running out the clock. But it does raise an interesting question. If an accommodation can be made for transgender drivers, what about gender-neutral drivers or gender-variant drivers or cisgender drivers? I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Walker, how are we? What are we doing on the internet to promote this program?
Yeah, we're live streaming, at least I think we're live streaming on YouTube and Facebook. We've been having some internet difficulties, so if we're off on one of
the, not our fault.
On one or the other, then it's, yeah, definitely not our fault. Mm-mm. So we enjoy blaming others, but well, not mentioning names.
Right. There's a big company that everybody's familiar with.
Yeah.
It controls our internet.
Yeah, we're having trouble with internet companies. Yeah. So anyways, if we're not on Facebook and YouTube live streaming, you can still catch the news articles on Facebook. I'll try to post those there. And, of course, you can always go to afr.net and listen live.
Okay, so you can watch the show on Facebook or YouTube?
Both.
Okay, just type in Today's Issues?
That's right.
Okay, check it out. And you're going to be putting the stories we're talking about. Hurricane's about to hit Hawaii, Fred?
Yeah, Hurricane Land. Now, yesterday was at a Cat 5, which is the worst it can get.
Right.
It's been reduced down to a Cat 4 as of this morning,
mm-hmm.
But still, that's pretty serious. We're still talking 140-mile-per-hour winds, sustained winds, and they're talking about 30 inches of rain over a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
This is only, what, the third hurricane in a century to hit. You don't. When you think of hurricanes, you think Florida, the east coast of the mainland, but you don't often hear about it when it comes to Hawaii, but they're about to get hammered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't think of hurricanes in Hawaii.
Nope.
Hurricanes are in the Caribbean, mm-hmm. not in Hawaii. But my parents were there last time one hit. Was that
really?
The 80s or 90s? Do you know when the
I'm
last
not
time?
Sure.
Yeah, I think
maybe,
they were there.
Maybe 92, something like that.
Man. Yeah, I think they were over there when that happened. I don't think it was it was probably like a 3, but not like a 5 or 4. But anyway. All right. Well, with us now is Jan Markell. Jan's president and founder of Olive Tree Ministries and host of radio program Understanding of the Times, which is on the weekend here on AFR. And she joins us most Thursdays. And Fred, you have a – Jan, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Fred, you have a question?
Yes, good morning, Jan. You know, during the election campaign, one of the promises that President Trump made was moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And, you know, a lot of people were skeptical because a whole bunch of presidential candidates had promised that over the years and never did it. But President Trump did it, and it has been, congratulated for keeping his word. But now there's part two about to be unveiled in all of this, Jan. We're very interested. I'm interested to hear your speculation on this. President Trump will go to the United Nations late next month, where he says he is going to unveil his Middle East plan. Now, up to now, every plan that various leaders have come up with has not worked. Now the president's going to go. Now, the Palestinians are saying they don't even want to listen because of the move of the embassy, U.S. embassy, to Jerusalem and the United States formally recognizing Jerusalem as the capital. But is there anything the president can do, do you think, to appease the Palestinians? And do you have any speculation on what he's going to announce to the United Nations?
Well, I've talked to some of my ministry radio guests and others about this. Had Michelle Bachmann on air with me the last two weekends and discussed this a little bit with her privately. She does have access to President Trump, and she acknowledged both privately and on air that it certainly was the Evangelical Advisory Board that had the greatest influence on him to get that embassy moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And I think these same people, and there's a number of them, a couple dozen, who speak into his world, all pretty solid evangelicals, Robert Jeffress and a number of others, are speaking into this as we speak. Fred, I think you kind of gave the key words there, that the Palestinians aren't going to cooperate. They never have. They never will. Every article I read about this deal of the century, or however it's phrased, indicates that, you know, you've got to have two people, two parties in negotiations. Israel really doesn't have anybody to negotiate with because presently Mahmoud Abbas is not going to cooperate. My goodness, there's no way he's... First of all, the embassy's been moved, and that was a fatal flaw that they will never forgive, ever. So no matter what's put on the table, and I can tell you, Jerusalem, dividing it, will not be on the table. So it's all a non-starter. Now, there might be something up President Trump's sleeve that we don't know about that could be a game changer, but I don't think we know what it is.
Jan, a lot of presidents, Republican and Democrat over the last few decades, have suggested a, quote, two-state solution, end quote, to the Israeli-Palestinian situation. Is that something you think President Trump's going to bring back up?
I think he may, but if he does, I think he knows that it's going to go nowhere, that because of the obstacle of having to do any kind of negotiations with Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian people, my gosh, at the same time, rockets are coming down from Hamas and Hezbollah, and if they're not falling right now, they're going to be in the coming days. I think Donald Trump knows that this is a non-starter. However, I think he's smart enough to try to make this appeal, and he'll do it at the UN the end of September, and I think he'll make it sound good, and I think he'll make it sound like all parties are going to try to be a part of this. But I guarantee you, once they sit down face-to-face, if in fact they do, nothing's going to happen. Now, you know, all of us could be wrong here, but this is how it's being projected.
Yeah. You know, Ray, you've traveled in Israel many times. You know the situation over there as well. You know, and that's Ray, you comment on this, and Jan can. I read surveys where the Palestinians are the Arabs who live in Israel, you know, and haven't talked to them. They have a better life in Israel under the Israeli government than they would in many Arab countries.
But Jan, isn't it true to say that there, to some degree, to Tim's point, there's a disconnect between the Palestinian people, perhaps, that I'm just talking about the, quote, average Palestinian person and their leaders who are implacably opposed. I mean, that they hate Israel with a furious kind of hatred. Mm-hmm. How do you find a way to work around the leadership of the Palestinian leaders to get to the Palestinian people who are normal people and want a better mm-hmm. life and they want safety and security? Or is that itself a pipe dream?
Yeah, it probably is a pipe dream because you're right. Palestinian people, by and large, just kind of want to be left alone to somehow live a productive life, raise children, etc. The Palestinian leaders will not let them do that. But the irony of all of this is all the blame for that goes to the Israelis. And there are enough terrorists within the Palestinian community. I'm not saying they're all, but there are enough terrorists, even if you've got 4, 5, 6, 7%, there are enough that make all of these negotiations make living together nearly impossible. That's why that wall was built a number of years ago, to stop the terrorists from within the Palestinian community from slipping into Israel, slitting the throats of innocent Israelis. But keep in mind, 95% of the Palestinian people aren't really interested in slitting the throats of the Israelis. They simply want to live their lives, but they've been handed corrupt leaders, the most corrupt of the corrupt. Keep in mind that Mahmoud Abbas financed the 1972 slaughter of Israeli athletes in Munich, Germany, back in the Olympics back in 1972. Abbas financed that. So this is the leader they have. How do you make peace? How do you sit down at a negotiating table with a man who financed the slaughter of Israeli athletes in 1972? Yeah. You can't.
Jan, have you had your conference yet?
September 29th, Fred's coming up to my conference, so I better not have had it.
Okay. Good answer. Good answer. Well, where can people find out more about the conference and your ministry?
Yep, olivetreeviews.org, olivetreeviews.org. It's Saturday, September 29th. We're live streaming it totally free. Just go to that website address.
Okay.
And I promise you they'll understand the times a whole lot better by the end of the day.
And Jan's show, Understanding the Times, comes on the weekends, Saturday at 1 o'clock Central Time and noon on Sundays. Central
Correct.
Time.
Thank you.
I got it down. I just know when I just know when I come out of church and I flip on AFR that Jan's on.
Yeah.
So I know the time for the Sunday show for sure. Although your Monday show, I'm hopefully on the golf course. So
hopefully. All right. Hopefully. Well, that's all right. You're forgiven.
All right. Thanks, Jan. Appreciate it.
Goodbye.
What did you say, Walker?
I think you meant Saturday. You said my Monday. On the golf course.
Oh, yeah, no Saturdays. Saturdays.
Although Mondays, you hope you were on the golf course.
I wish.
That's right.
I wish, but hey, you know, can't have everything, right?
That's right.
Most Saturdays I do get to golf, and I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I don't take that for granted. All right. Can you take golf for granted, though? You really?
I don't think so. But, you know, one thing that President Trump's done as much as President Obama is golf. But the good thing is the media didn't criticize Obama for golfing, so
right.
Trump can golf all he wants.
Right. And it's kind of different, isn't it, when you golf on your own course?
Well, that's true. You don't have to pay for it.
Right.
All right. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. You know, talking about Israel and the land of the Bible, Ray, I think the average Palestinian over there would like to live in peace and just have a good life. Now, they're no fans of Israeli government in terms of, you know, their enthusiasm for Israeli government would probably be a 4 on a scale of 1 to 10. But the Palestinians are ruled by mob leaders, basically. The Hamas.
Well, they're held hostage.
Held hostage.
By their own leaders.
They're held hostage. So, you know, it's kind of, I equate it, it's kind of like, you know, the mob in Chicago during the rule of the reign of what was it, Al Capone or whatever?
Al Capone. Yeah.
Okay, you can live in the neighborhood, and you might, but you couldn't speak out against Al Capone, or you'd be killed.
You couldn't do that and live very long. That's right.
Right. So you had to, you know, you even though you may not have liked the way he dealt with the things, it was a mob rule, and you knew that you were going to die if you spoke out. What's that same way for the Palestinian people? They speak out against Hamas or Abbas, for example. They are going to, their life will be very difficult,
if not very short.
Yeah, not very short.
At that point. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. I appreciate you listening to AFR. Fred, you want to introduce our next guest?
Yes, a voice that I think most of our audience is very familiar with, Brigitte Gabriel, founder and chairman of Act for America Ministries. Brigitte, welcome to Today's Issues.
Thank you, Tim, and everybody else. I'm delighted to be with you this morning.
Yeah, you sound wide awake. You never sound this way before.
Yeah.
Great to have you with us.
Thank you.
Brigitte, this is Tim, and I've got Fred, Walker, and Ray here. I want to ask you to identify us all as we go along here because it's hard.
Okay, Fred, Walker, and Ray. I'm writing them down.
Wow, okay. That's impressive right there. That's impressive. Well, tell us, you've got a, first of all, give us a one-minute background for those who don't know what your mission is and why you speak about the issues the way you do. Tell us about yourself.
Oh, wonderful. Well, you know, when people hear me speak, they say, Brigitte, where does this passion come from? This comes from my childhood and why I was raised, and this is exactly why I wrote my book, Rise. Rise, because I understand what happens when people turn a blind eye to evil. You see, I was born and raised in Lebanon. My 9/11 happened to me in 1975. When radical Islamists blew up my home, bringing it down, burying me under the rubble wounded, as they shouted, Allahu Akbar. My only crime was that I was a Christian living in a Christian town. I ended up in the hospital for 2.5 months. And as I laid in a hospital bed, hooked up to IVs in both arms, I would ask my father, why did they do this to us? And my father would tell me, because we are Christians, the Muslims consider us infidels and they want to kill us. So I learned that I'm wanted dead at the age of 10 years old simply because I was born a Christian. I ended up leaving the hospital and coming back home, but my home was no longer the home I left. I ended up living in a bomb shelter underground in an 8x10 room without electricity, without water, and very little food. And that's where I lived for 7 years of my life, from the age of 10 till the age of 17, robbed of my youth.
Now, your new book is called Rise, R-I-S-E. You just mentioned it. What's it about?
It's the subtitle of the book is Rise in Defense of Judeo-Christian Values and Freedom. Our values and our freedoms are under assault right now. America as we know it is being transformed before our very eyes. The flag that once flew on every street corner is now considered a hate symbol on college campuses. Athletes who used to break out in tears of pride during the national anthem are now kneeling in protest. Patriotism is seen as hateful. Freedom of speech is being eliminated by the tyranny of tolerance. And police are being targeted by criminals while the mainstream media victimizes their killers. Not to mention what's happening in our public schools, which are used to promote Islamic propaganda inside the classroom. Unvetted immigration is rampant. Christmas is under assault. This is exactly why I wrote Rise. I wrote Rise to not only educate those who love America about the problems facing our nation, but also to mobilize them to know what to do about it. In the book, I have a chapter titled The Death of Free Speech. I have a chapter titled The Leftist Islamist Coalition. Another one, The Business of Fake Hate, where I talk about the Southern Poverty Law Center, which, by the way, designated you and me as haters, you know, because, you know, AFR, American Family Radio, and Act for America, we are hate groups. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk talk about the lamestream media and Soros, our broken immigration, what's happening in the indoctrination of our students in our public schools. And I not only educate, because everybody educates. We're not lacking education on our side of the aisle, Tom, Fred, Walker, and Ray. But what we are lacking is what to do about the education that we have. And in the book, at the end of every chapter, I have a section titled Rise Up and Act. And I give people three things they can do under 10 minutes to make a difference for the country. Something you can do while sipping your cup of coffee in the morning, sitting in your pajamas, checking email at 7 a.m. in the morning. That's what makes a difference for the country. The time for education is over. Now is the time for action. We want people to activate their faith. Activate your faith. Jesus was an activist. Jesus stood up against evil. Jesus spoke up his mind. We need to be the same type of activist as our Lord Jesus Christ, and we need to activate our faith and turn our education into action.
Bridget, it's Fred here. One of the things that's been in the news lately, I know you talked about it, was this compound that was discovered up in the northeast part of New Mexico that was being run by this group of Muslims, and they were training kids how to go in and shoot up in our public schools. One of the key guys arrested there is basically a guy who has connections with terrorists. Now, you wrote about this on Facebook, and tell us how Facebook responded to that.
Exactly. Talk about the death of free speech. So now we have Facebook, we have the tech giant companies, you know, Google, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. I mean, this is how people, a lot of people now get their information. You know, a lot of people are on their iPads, iPhone, whatever, you know, this is where they're getting their news. And Facebook has become a major platform where people, you know, always are getting alerts on Facebook. Well, I posted on Facebook a picture of Siraj ibn Wahaj, the man who was basically operating this training camp in New Mexico, where they were training 10 children how to shoot up schools. This man killed his own child. Remember the child that they found dead? They found bones of a 3-year-old child. So this man killed, not only was training other children to shoot up schools, not only killed his own child in an Islamic religious ritual, not only had multiple wives, one of them was in the country illegally for 20 years, but I put a picture of this man as he was living on bail with a big smirk on his face, you know, a smile, and I said, this is the face of a sick and deprived man who was training children to shoot up schools. And the judge who let him out should be fired from his job, because if this man kills anybody, the blood is going to be on their hands. Mm. So for that, Facebook put me in what I call Facebook jail, yeah, where they suspended me, you know, for 24 hours. And it's not only Facebook. This week alone, Tim, Fred, Walker, and Ray, see, I'm going to make sure I say yes, all your names all at once. This is not the first time this week. This week, in the last 7 days, we also were attacked by YouTube. YouTube took down one of my videos from 2012. Get this, 2012. And they took down and they put a strike on our YouTube channel. Now, you know, right now, YouTube is the only platform for videos. Everybody goes to YouTube to watch videos. Mm-hmm. And if you have three strikes against you, YouTube will shut you down. They'll never post anything from you again. Basically, it'll mean it will silence your voice on the internet for anybody to see your videos. That's a problem. That's exactly why I titled the chapter in my book, Rise, The Death of Free Speech.
Brigitte Ray here. I want to just follow up on this, because we are living, as you've said, in a social media world. But these companies, they're multinational. Facebook, over 2 billion people use Facebook. So how do you fight back? How do we rise up in a practical way when you're shut down or censored by Facebook or YouTube or Twitter?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking that. Exactly. And that's what I lay out in the book, because again, I said, you know, people are frustrated and they do not know what to do. Right now, we are working with members of Congress. We are working with the government. We do not want monopolies in the United States. And look, we have a history where our government stepped in and broke monopolies. We want to give a fair chance for people to be heard, to be entrepreneurs, to start new companies, and to be able to express their views. Now, with Facebook, Facebook is so ahead of any new company that's going to be able to start up and compete with Facebook. They're not going to be able to compete with Facebook. So the only option we have is to make sure our government and Congress hold Facebook accountable, just like when they had hearings with Mark Zuckerberg on Capitol Hill, to make sure that companies will not be censoring voices in America. In America, freedom of speech is one of the bedrocks of our freedoms in this country. I mean, it was so important that our founding fathers, with their wisdom, felt it was so important to make sure that is one of the anchors of our freedoms in America. We cannot silence people's freedom of speech. It may offend some people, but people need to be able to sit around the table and debate ideas, and in this case, with Facebook. So in the book, I lay out what people can do, how they can call their elected officials, how they can follow us. We have a website set up where we always update bills coming down for a vote. We are now working with members of Congress to make sure censorship will not be allowed in America, that everybody will have a voice. We want to be able to be updated on this bill and where to go, and that's what the type of information that I give in the book.
Yeah. Hey, Brigitte, thank you so much for your information that you've shared with us this morning. The book is called Rise, R-I-S-E, by Brigitte Gabriel, our guest this morning on American Family Radio. And Brigitte, thanks so much. We appreciate it, and God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you. I appreciate being with you this morning.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, bye.
Another thing that you can do is, you know, in response to Facebook and others who, and I'm not sure exactly how this works, Ray, but I guess they have people who monitor their websites or their right. Facebook, YouTube, the other places, and then make a determination on what is allowed and what isn't allowed on those platforms. And right. So you can appeal to them. That would be something you shouldn't disregard, I would say. We've done that before, the one or two times that we've had, and we, you know, one of them was reversed because we appealed on that. This is what happened to the, what was it, the Diamond and Silk?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Right.
Now,
right.
They have a huge platform, and they can appear on Fox News and get attention, but they embarrassed Facebook and shamed Facebook because they were censored. For some reason, Ray, the lefties have gotten control of all these big social media platforms.
Well, this fellow Jack, who runs Twitter, publicly said just a few days ago, we lean left.
Right.
I appreciated that. I mean, we've all known it.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So he said the truth. And I think you're right. You've got to use all the avenues. And let's face it, when Facebook shuts you down, or Twitter or YouTube, the best way to reverse it is to go public and to fight
right.
back, because they hate the adverse publicity.
Yeah.
Hate it.
Yeah, because I mean, they still depend, you know, conservative people in America spend a lot of money, and so they don't want to lose all the conservatives, but they do. They just can't. A lot of those people who control these big social media platforms don't like the conservative message. And so, anyway, good to have Brigitte Gabriel on. What a life story she has. And, you know, raised in a Christian home in Lebanon. You heard what she experienced from the age of 10 through 17. And then she's just a wonderful Christian giant, in my opinion. Although she's only like 4'9", or something, like that. 5 foot maybe, 5'1", or something like that. She's a petite woman, but she has a bold voice, I tell you, for righteousness. And we appreciate her being on with us today. Walker Tom Fred, and Ray. I think I got the four of us right here. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.